Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Ficus Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, purveyor of all that is nerdy and ready to spread my knowledge and wisdom amongst all of my friends, family, and favorite listeners out there in the geek sphere itself. And it is a wild, wild week. It was funny, last week, everything hit after the podcast was in the can. So I was like, okay, I guess we've got stuff for next week. Although after that, 2 days, everything dried up. Of course, probably because of the holiday, Memorial Day weekend, and everything else going on in the world as stores begin to open up, which is great because, you know, that means I can go to places and I can buy Transformers and Lego. Don't ask. It's a weird little thing all of a sudden. I don't know why, but the new Cybertron War series, the Transformers, the Siege... Of course, the cartoon is based off this figure line that's coming to Netflix, but I've just been, hooked. It's, all over again from, the younger years of G1 Transformers. Wow, they, brought back Hound and Wheeljack and Sideswipe. The Starscream looks like the one from Cybertron where it's, a little pyramid flying in the air. It's kind of cool. So, a nice little trip down memory lane. Of course, they're 100% plastic. Nothing like the G1 Transformers, which were, metal and were durable and great. And yeah, these I feel like I'm going to break the damn thing if I move it into the wrong position or twist it just wrong. But they're intricate, they're cool, they're detailed. If you're a Transformer fan, I definitely recommend picking up a few of them at least for sure. Some of them just don't really care. But, the Starscream, Shockwave, and Soundwave, oh my god, beautiful, beautiful done. So, pick them up if you're a Transformer fan. Target, Walmart. I've been on the hunt for the Ghostbuster figures because of the re-release on them from Kenner. They're out in the Walmarts. So, funny story. I went to GameStop, and of course they can't let people in. But there's a guy sitting at the counter. I can see him. I'm looking through the glass at him. And I'm waving. He's ignoring me. But there's the sign on the door that I did finally read. And it says, you can call us and, we'll help you. So I call. He picks up the phone and, then he decides to look at me. So him and I are looking at each other through the glass while I'm talking to him on the phone to see if, what shipments they've got, what's coming in, things like that. And it was just really weird and surreal. It was just one of those awkward nerd moments that I'm like, hey, dude, how you doing? Nerd under glass. Great. So, anywho, one of the big stories that broke right after we got off last week was the announcement of Ruby Rose quitting Batwoman. And I'm stunned. I'm stunned, but I'm not. And here's why. I know that, I think it was halfway through the season, Ruby got injured, and she had to do a surgery. So, I honestly think that this is kind of an indicator to why, one of the reasons anyway, why she's moving on. So, she's quitting Batwoman, which I kind of am upset by this, and I think this is going to come back and haunt her. This is kind of like one of those moments like Denise Crosby with Star Trek The Next Generation, who don't have a whole lot of faith in the series, or for whatever reason, decide to leave a show. Batwoman in no means looks like it's going to slow down. In fact, it was a much bigger surprise to me as the series went on, how much better it got. So, that said, her departure just strikes me as very strange and misplaced. If the injury or the surgery kind of deterred her, and maybe the role is a little bit more physical than what she's looking to do. I would think of the most of the time that they have like some stunt doubles doing the heavy lifting and, you know, the hard punching and, you know, all of that stuff. But to have her after the first season pull out and say she's done is a little odd. She did say that, you know, none of this is based on anyone with the staff or the team or any other extenuating circumstances, that she just feels, you know, this was it. Which I'm sure comes to a shock to the writing staff and the producers and everyone else involved. I honestly am curious to see who they're going to get to replace her, because I think she did a fabulous job of portraying Kate. I think that how she approached the character and the physicality, even the looks and mannerisms are very indicative to what happens in the comics. And her portrayal of the character and her lifestyle and everything, it really fit very well from the comic book, and it transferred nicely. So I'm curious now. CW, of course, is saying that they will recast someone for Batwoman. So will we see a weird merging of Crisis Batwoman, that all of a sudden she just looks different? You know, forget it was a dream. It was a dimensional shift that suddenly merged all of the Batwomen together. Because, let's face it, some of the Batmen and Supermen looked different in different Earths for Crisis, so could be an easy explanation, may not, since we're still sorting out from Crisis on the show. At any rate, we do wish Ruby the best of luck. She will be missed off of Batwoman, and I'm sad to see her go. So there you go. Sad, sad, sad. What else? Oh, our sponsor, of course, is Suzy Q's, who is an amazing jeweler. She creates such stunning works, and I can't emphasize just how beautiful they are. She is still offering a 15% discount on any orders of $15 or more. And go to her page. We have the link right there for you. Take a peruse, get a good look, see if there's something that strikes your fancy. Red loves her earrings that she constantly sports. The bracelets are amazing. I do definitely need to pick one up for myself. I am lacking in the jewelry side on that, just after my watch and my ring. So something I definitely need to add to my own collection, of course. And just give it a look. See if there's something that catches your eye. Also, please give us a like. Share. We are platform friendly now. We are everywhere you want to be. Of course, now with the addition of iHeartRadio, we can be in the car anywhere you want. Of course, with iTunes, Windows, Podbean, which of course is where we're hosted. We are everywhere. Nothing escapes our grasp. You can listen to us in the tub. Yeah, that's a little weird. Never mind. Don't listen to us in the tub. That just may be kind of odd. What else? Oh, in other TVs, it was like a huge TV week for me, because we had the final for Masked Singer, which was a huge letdown. It wasn't a letdown because of how the championship and everything went. But I honestly think, and I'm completely convinced, your song choice is what makes or breaks you in these competitions. And to tell the truth, Turtle and Frog's songs were just were kind of lame. I mean, they weren't enthusiastic. They were just kind of meh. I think if you're in a singing competition and it's the final, you go for the power ballad. You go over the top. You get flamethrowers, explosions, dancers, stuff falling from the ceiling, I mean, a light show, you know, some laser light monstrosity that would make Pink Floyd envious. Something that is just going to just drop the hammer, drop the mic, and you just storm off that stage like, yeah, I just did that. The choices that Frog and Turtle made were just dull. I was so disappointed in the final. I'm not disappointed with, the winner and all of that. I'm not going to spoil anything, but I was expecting a little bit more. We'll see how the next season goes. This definitely by far was the most intricate and longer running of the seasons. And I liked how the breakdown was for the different groups. And I hope they hold to that going into the next season, which we will see them later, they said. Somewhere, I think, closer to October or something. Which is good. I mean, I'm not going to stop watching the show. But that's my hint. That's my suggestion. If you're in a music performance, power ballads all the way. Maybe a little heartfelt something in the middle. But it always seemed like the celebrities that did, like, you know, the less enthusiastic or just the kind of wah-wah were always on the chopping block that week. So everybody wants goosebumps. Everybody. Don't kid me. I know better. What else? Oh, so after we get done with celebrity mass singer nonsense, the return of the greatest show ever, Holy Moly, is back. And it is awesome. Oh my God. I cannot tell you how much of an improvement from last year to this year that Holy Moly has performed. I'm just blown away. Rob Riggle is hilarious. The chemistry between the two of them is just so good, and the course is even better. There's a lot more water hazards that I think by far are an addition, and they're great. Because who doesn't like a drenched golfer? There's like a water trap every hole almost, and it is awesome. I love it so much. I can't emphasize. So I know last year that we wanted to try and get Private Cheeseburger, Double A Ron, into this somehow, but I never saw any way of like where to apply or how to get them, you know, get people on board. But it's probably for the best that we didn't get him on there, because it's pretty brutal. Because okay, so there's two holes that are great, because they brought the windmills back, but they added, of course, the water hazard. So if you get hit by one of the blades, it launches you about 30 feet into the air into this huge a pool. It is just, I mean, I had this, I was just laughing so hard I had to stop and pause it and just collect myself, because and it, you only, you not only do you have it once but twice, because you have to get through two windmills, so you can't get out and go immediately to the green. You have to go through the next windmill. And it is just, I mean, diabolical as far as what they've put together. And then there's another one that it's called Hole Number Two. And what it is a line of porta-potties with people inside them. So you have to putt along the doors, which is this narrow strip of green, of course. And once your ball is past it, or if it falls into the drink, which of course on the other side of this putt is the water hazard, you have to run along this narrow thing to get to the other side. But while you're running, there is the chance that someone inside the porta potty is going to open the door, of course launching you into the water hazard. You have a slight chance of getting through. But, yeah, so far, the first episode, no one made it by. Everybody went into the water. It was inspiring. I want to design my own hazard for this. So, the last year, and I don't know, because it was just the first episode. We'll see what they decide to do. But John Levitz is a part of it now, and he's dressed as a pirate. And all I could think of is Steve the Pirate from Dodgeball. If you can dodge a golf ball, you can
dodge a dodgeball? I don't know, but he's putt the plank. He basically does the chipping thing that Stephen Curry did last year. So I don't know if they just don't have him because of everything that's going on, or they're just mixing it up a little bit. But he is doing, like, from behind the green and all of his commentary stuff that he did last year. He's also awarding the green jacket and the golden putter. So Stephen Curry is still part of it, it looks like. They animated him last week, and I don't know if that's just because of COVID and when they decide to film all of the winners at once, and maybe that was after everything had gone south for everybody. But, nonetheless, this show, light years better than last year. Oh my god. Can't wait to see what's next. If it gets any better, I don't know how, but it definitely could be better. Sure. Like I said, more water hazards, more explosions, maybe. A giant rubber ducky. There's a shark that you have to jump on after John Lovitz putts your ball across the water hazard. And, of course, if you miss the shark jumping on it and you go in the water, that's a stroke penalty. They just really... ABC outdid themselves on this. I really applaud them. I think it's great. And it makes sense just because now with summer coming, everyone's launching their summer game shows, and everything I've seen has just been kind of I guess. Some of it's been interesting. Some of it I'm curious to watch. The Family Feud Celebrity Edition or Late Night Feud or Late Night Price is Right have been kind of entertaining, but the Holy Moly for sure is at the top of my list for must-watches for the summer season. Absolutely. Perfect fit in. The other one, which I'm kind of scratching my head. So after I watch Holy Moly, then comes Extreme Tag. And this is hosted by the Watt brothers, the football sensation, family sensation, that basically host, commentate, and interview all of these normal average people. I can't say average. There's some interesting people that are running this. So you've got people that come in, they're wearing flags, like flag football, like you did in high school, and you're running for your life. And the gladiators or the taggers are just specimens. My God, there are some huge people that are chasing you down, running you over, grabbing you from out of the air, and just brutalizing you. It really has a feel of American Gladiators from back in the day, but you're running it. You get points for surviving. You get points for hitting certain time limits. You get a lot of different ways to collect points, and it's not all the same layout. So, like round one, everyone is safe. Then round two is a eliminator, and somebody's going whoever has the least amount of points. And it's obstacle courses. There's some... I mean, one of these guys could jump, I swear, like 30 feet. There's gymnasts. There's bodybuilders. I honestly think a couple of them are ex-football players. These people are just smashing nerds, like, on a whole new level. I don't know if I liked it. And because every time I kept watching it, the contrast between American Gladiators just kept just running over and over in my head. And then you have, like, the Dwayne Johnson, you know, show that's on the other network, and I'm just like, there's too much of a similarity, and meh. I mean, I like Dwayne Johnson. I like The Rock a lot better. The Watt brothers are just kind of awkward in their interviewing skills and their commentating. But it honestly, listening to them is probably more entertaining than watching the tag, just because of how they are. It's really just listening to brothers, and I can kind of sympathize with this and kind of relate, because it really honestly just sounds like when my brothers and I get together and just go back and forth on things and then commentating, or when we're watching, you know, the football games or even just shows. It just, the ribbing and everything else that goes into it, it really... that's entertaining, and it's just listening to brothers, you know, rag on each other and rip on each other. It's kind of entertaining. Give it a watch. Let me know what your thoughts are, because I'm really curious if Extreme Tag holds on. I don't think it will, but like I said, right now, top of my list, holy moly, way better than season two. Or way better than season one, excuse me. What else? Oh, so that covers the majority of it. Now, I promised you a new segment, and actually I've got two. So right now, we'll go to the new segment, Imagine Music, Rockets, Bright Fanfare, because this is my shakedown. This week's shakedown is, of course, on Stargirl and its premiere on the CW. Of course, if you were a member of the DC streaming service, you actually got it a day early in episode 2. You've probably already seen by the time this airs if you have the DC streaming service. I don't know if they're going to hold through this for the entire run or what their plans are, but right now, if you can get it early on Monday instead of having to wait till Tuesday, that's kind of cool. What I initially thought on Stargirl was another CW show that I may or may not dig. I didn't care on a lot of reasons, because I'm not interested in the character. I'm not interested in teenage angsty stuff. I'm more interested in, you know, what they have produced. I don't need another Riverdale. I don't need Vampire Diaries. However, CW, of course, is ahead of the game on this and did not disappoint me by giving me something like that. They actually delivered a solid, solid story. And that actually made me feel redeemed, that I took the time to watch the show. Because I was worried, and I had mentioned this last week, that I'm going to get some, you know, weird agenda, some story that I just can't relate to, or something that a person's choices and lifestyle should not be a plot point. All right? That I understand how that works, and I'm open to multiple faceted characters. However, when you make it a plot point, it takes away and sabotages the story that you're trying to tell. Thankfully, all of those traps were avoided, and what we got was a very intriguing and driven story idea and characters. The best part about it is how it opened. So it basically, we're seeing the end of a story, and of course where there's an ending, there is a beginning. As the JSA goes down swinging against, I only can assume, is the Legion of Doom. Characters and villains that we haven't been able to identify. Of course, if you're a reader of comics, you kind of piece together who is who. I mean, Solomon Grundy is in there, which is, I honestly never thought I would see Solomon Grundy in a non-Superman story. I've been waiting for him to show up in The Flash or Supergirl, but to have him show up in Stargirl, okay, I'll take it. But as we open into Stargirl, we see the JSA basically at its lowest point. This is it. There's no walking out of this, and there's some sacrifices made. So with that said, you're it's interesting because you don't want to see heroes go down, but you want to see more about the heroes. And I think the way the CW approached this was inspiring. And I'll tell you why. Because you have the old, which is kind of what Stargirl's comic is based off of. She's trained by the older first generation, the Silver Age heroes that instill the responsibility, the weight of being a hero. So when Starman buys it, which is portrayed by Joel McHale, and I applaud that man's performance. I didn't think he had it in him, but like Bill Burr, Joel McHale is multifaceted and was a superhero for all of 10-15 minutes until he went kaput. But as he slips the earthly coil, the mortal coil is gone, he passes on the staff, which is now, you know, being taken care of by his sidekick, Stripes in the comic. And of course, time progresses. To see the transition of old to new is cool. I liked it. It was well done. Was it cheesy? Actually, no. It was kind of like, all right. I mean, they didn't waste any time. They gave you enough filler and moved on. So it was worth the first, you know, intro. I am more curious about the Justice Society. Of course, as Joel McHale passes away, as he dies, Starman, he does tell Owens that he needs to, you know, find an heir, not him, keep the JSA alive, keep the tradition going, and that's it. He has a collection of pictures, and in the pictures, the JSA, like, team photo, you've got Our Man, you've got Dr. Midnight, you've got the classic JSA, including Flash. And it looks like John Wesley Shipp is the Flash. He is Jay Garrick, which is cool. And I was upset that if they had cut him from this, that it would have been a little more jarring. Just because if it's supposed to be in the same universe, it would have been a little bit weird. Because that's the Flash. That's Jay Garrick. That John Wesley Shipp. But the cool and how they approached it was it was endearing because you can tell it is him. You can't see his face because in the picture that they took of the team photo, you see the outline, and of course you can tell he's blurring himself, so he's there, but you don't know who he is. So he's blurring his features, you can't get a solid shot, but you can tell just kind of like the outline that it is John Wesley Shipp. And I hope we see him in this. I don't know how they're going to approach Crisis. I don't know how this works with the timeline and everything else. We don't see him in the fight. We see a couple of other JSAers, but we don't really get up close to Flash. We just see his helmet and it's just laying there with a bunch of stuff sticking out of it. Like took one to the nugget and he was out. The story is great. It's uplifting. It's inspirational. I really hope they continue with this at this pace. The downside and the interesting part about it is the villains are in Nebraska. We start in California, and it works. It makes sense. The final fight is, you know, not too far from the observatory, and at the end of it, no one's left, and time moves on, and we find ourselves in Nebraska, which is, okay, Nebraska. It was a little weird, because what villain hides in Nebraska? It made me think of Smallville and why, through the entire season, Lex Luthor is living in this gigantic castle in Kansas. What villain hides in Nebraska? I mean, we don't know what happened. We don't know what the story is of what the fight happened or why the JSA, you know, had to sacrifice so much or what's going on. And I'm hoping we get some flashbacks and some moments that take us back to what happened. Why are we here? Why do villains retire? Is that just where they retire? Is there a community? Is there, you know, a special senior citizen villains discount? I don't know. Is this a hit? That remains to be seen. Is this going to be more than one season? I don't know. The way they're kind of building this is interesting to the point of I don't know. I'm hoping we get a decent story. I don't know how many episodes we're in store for. Maybe 12, maybe less, depending upon COVID, depending upon how they had actually broken this all out originally. The comic, like I said, I never really was too much into, but as this progresses, I'm sure we will see more. But right now, in my mind, this is a hit. This is fun. It's light, it's comic-y, and I like the different dynamic with all of the characters. Amy Smart, of course, is the mother, and the father for Stargirl is nowhere to be seen. He mysteriously disappears the same night that Starman dies. Of course, he looks like Joel McHale, but he's not because, of course, you know, he has the wrong name, and Stripes knows everything about Starman. So, Watch it. Give me your input. That's my shakedown this week. Next week, I will have the shakedown for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as we return Wednesday night for the new season, for the final season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. My shakedown next week will be on that episode. So please let me know your thoughts on Stargirl in addition to what you see and like about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And that's this week's shakedown. Moving along, what do we got for movies? Not a whole lot. Our meat and potatoes this week was on Jay and Silent Bob's reboot. If you haven't read that, please give it a look-see. It strikes true in so many points in being a nerd and loving the nerd culture, but at the same point, it's so painful to watch some of the reboot, but it says it really good in the meat and potatoes that it's a train wreck. You can't help but look at it, and you want to look away, but you also don't want to miss anything. So, but the big news that came out for movies, and my reaction on this one is kind of 50-50. With Justice League's release in 2017, everyone was constantly complaining, what about the Snyder Cut? What about the Snyder Cut? That's what every fan, nerd, and moviegoer was screaming, we want to see the Snyder Cut. Because it was longer, it was a different story, or there were different arcs in it as far as how everything worked out for the characters. Now, HBO Max has decided that they are going to fulfill the multitude of fans' requests. Screams have not gone unheard, and people are going to finally get their wishes to come true. Because HBO Max in 2021 is going to release the Snyder Cut for all its glory. And will it be everything you hope? Maybe. I mean, will it save the film? That's the question. There, let's get to the meat and potatoes of it. Will the Snyder Cut save this film? It wasn't like it was that great of a film. There were some cool moments. There were some good takeaways. But at the same point, it was, it was just kind of thrown together. And maybe with the added elements from Snyder, we will see easier transitions. We'll see a little bit better character development. Everyone won't be fighting as much. Or we'll see something different when they bring Superman back from the grave. I don't know what to expect. Am I excited about it? Meh. I'm actually rather impartial when it comes to Justice League. I don't know if it's just because I didn't care much for the film. I don't know if it's just because I'm it really didn't impact me. Yeah, there were so many other things going on that I don't know. I'm curious. I'm sure we haven't heard the last of this, and we may hear a small little hush from the nerd community as now that we approach 2021. This is the perfect news to lift people up and like, ooh, something to look forward to since we don't know what the hell else everything else is going on. I, for one, I'm like I said, impartial. Let me know what your thoughts are on Justice League. Maybe I'm missing the point, but, you know, there was no Green Lantern, so I didn't care. Also in movie news, and this was actually kind of funny, only because I can't imagine these two in a vampire thriller. Peter Dinklage, and Jason Momoa are reuniting for this vampire thriller that is going to be funny? I don't know. I mean, it's supposed to be a new action-adventure vampire film that we don't really have a release date for, except for the fact that it's going to be a fun action-adventure film that is in the Bram Stoker world. Excuse me. A little coffee. And of course,
We all know that who's going to play the vampire, of course, Momoa. And Van Helsing is going to be played by Dinklage. He is a descendant of the Van Helsing line, and it's his job to vanquish vampires for money. So I guess the story goes, there's this huge bounty put up on Momoa's head, and the vampire hunter, Dinklage, goes after it. This could be great. I think it's going to be hilarious. just to see these two, you know, put on the same screen together. We never really got to see them on the same screen because of Game of Thrones. They were in different continents. Just wasn't going to happen. And with Momoa not getting past, like, season two, there's, you know, no chance of them crossing paths. So, unless, of course, he came back as one of the Ice Warriors. Anyway, this looks like it'll be a hilarious little romp. We don't have a whole lot more other details of this coming out yet. And as we do, we'll let you know just what's going on with it. Because I think this is a great idea. We need some better Van Helsing lighthearted vampire movies. Just because we do. What else? This just got handed to me from the bullpen, and I you're going to get my initial reaction because I haven't read this yet, but I saw this pop up in the feeds just as I was getting on, as Scott Derrickson is going to direct the new Labyrinth sequel. Scott Derrickson, was just recently let go from the Doctor Strange Into the Multiverse of Madness, which, of course, we've already talked about the new director and all of that, so we're not going to rehash the Doctor Strange topic. My initial reaction to this is, I don't like it. I don't. The whole thing, this thing is missing so many different elements that made it great, that a direct sequel to what we saw from the first Labyrinth makes it almost impossible to get behind. One of the key elements in my mind, of course, is David Bowie. He made that film in my mind. I mean, of course, Jim Henson, this was his vision, his focal point. We don't have Jim, we don't have Brian Henson around to take it to that next level. The Dark Crystal that was on Netflix was okay, but it just still was missing that magic. And I have a feeling and a fear that this is going to be the exact same thing. And I know the technology has gone light years beyond what Jim Henson was dealing with back in 1986 when he created Labyrinth. But the whole point of that film is, you know, Jennifer Connelly doesn't like their little baby brother. Get rid of him. So it creates a whole new, you know, understanding when you don't have these characters. So I don't like it. I think this one they should just leave alone. The Dark Crystal I can understand. That's a whole different world, different characters, different creatures, and you can build on it. Or, you know, give us what they gave us. The Labyrinth is, I think, just one of those one-offs that doesn't need a sequel. It's fine. Like the original Tremors, we didn't need to know what else happened. We don't need to know about the Graboids. Just leave it be. It was a good story. It was a fun story. Labyrinth does not need a sequel. Give me a sequel to Firefly. There we go. That's something that could use a sequel. What happens? Who's flying the ship now that Wash is dead? He got skewered like a kebab. Who's flying the ship? Who are the new crew members? Give me a new Firefly film. Labyrinth sequel, just... No. I'm not sold on this. And maybe I'll change my mind as I see, you know, what's going to come out of it. But I don't know. Maybe. The sequel is being written by Maggie Levine,
who is the writer of Into the Dark and My Valentine. The production, of course, is coming out of TriStar Pictures. A bunch of nonsense. I don't like it. I don't. Quote me on it. I just have a bad feeling. Bad feeling. I had a bad feeling about this. What else? Speaking of bad feelings, speaking of Star Wars, this was kind of cool, and I've been hooked on it now because I saw it pop up in my feed, and I don't know why it took me so long to find this. The original Star Wars trilogy has been adapted into a 14-hour radio drama by NPR. And I think it's great. Woohoo! This is fun. I'll put the links for the first trilogy, the only trilogy that matters, 1980. You can hear all 14 hours of the Star Wars trilogy radio dramas on the internet. It's on YouTube. But we get Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. It's fun and it's awesome. It really feels like listening to it. It kind of gave me flashbacks of like the original Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Of course, people are making comparisons to it, like Flash Gordon or the original like Buck Rogers serials that were on the radios back in the day. So. It's fun. It's something that I was completely taken unaware, totally by surprise, not expected this. So I don't even know why it took me so long to find this. The new drama right now is showing that it's got 750,000 people listening to it or have listened to it. So it's fun. Something different, and it's the original Star Wars. I haven't gotten too far like into Empire, so I don't know how they're approaching like the sound effects, especially when you're dealing with the Falcon's run from Hoth. I don't know if we get the snowtroopers in the Wampa room. I don't know if we're doing the original or the updated, but still, it's Star Wars in a different way that is fun. It gives you flashbacks. It really has made me think of my youth in seeing the films originally. So by no means should this be overlooked. Like I said, I'll put the link in for the three, New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi in the post, so you can get in on that, because it's fun. Anyway, what else? Oh, another thing that I can't believe took so long to hit my desk, and maybe we talked about this, and I was asleep, but I can't imagine that. Especially, this is actually a story that I think Private Cheeseburger AA Ron would really be in on. Lucky Charms flavored beer. There is a Virginia-based brewery that somehow figured out a way to make a Lucky Charms beer. It's not available anywhere else but in Virginia, which makes me sad because I want to try it just for the simple fact. We do our Munch Madness, the cereal face-off, every year. And, well, at least the last couple, since we started it. And it's been a huge hit. But to get a breakfast-flavored cereal beer? Ew, I don't know how I feel about that. Yeah. I guess if you really love cereal and beer that much, like I said, I think this is Private Cheeseburger AA Ron's main vein right here. So I'm going to send him the link on this to get some feedback on it, but I think it must. If you've tried it, let me know, because I want to know what this tastes like. If it really does taste like Lucky Charms, so is it like marshmallow flavored? Is it more like the milk at the end? I mean, what aspect of Lucky Charms flavor or taste do you focus on? Like, after it's been in the milk and the marshmallows have had a chance to dissolve, the sugar off of the gram symbols, what part of it? The can is very decorative. It looks like the cereal box. It's got the rainbows, it's got the marshmallows. these guys spared no expense to get the right kind of presentation for you to keep your breakfast hopes alive. I think this is silly, but I, you know what, like I said, I don't know why it took this long to get to my desk, but it came across my bench. So I guess the locations are Smartmouth in Norfolk, Virginia. Norfolk and in Virginia Beach. Pardon me. So, I don't know if you can order it on the website. I don't know if that's like moonshining. If you have it cross state lines, because I think you have to have a license. But I'm sure that if you go down there and you buy it and you bring it back, it'd be easy. I don't know if you can order it off their website. But, yeah. It's the Smartmouth calls the brew magically ridiculous. I agree. It's 16 ounces. Wow. And they're actually carrying 6.6% alcohol. Wow. All right. That's one delicious breakfast treat for that functioning alcoholic in your life that wants breakfast and beer at the same time. That's the way to go. Also in, this just hit, the dungeon DLC for Minecraft is available for download. I was actually in the midst of downloading just to check it out. Figured it'd be kind of fun. I think my interest in, the Nintendo game has run its course. I'm just on the Switch. I can't do it anymore. The chirping noises drive me nuts, so I'm out. But we'll try Minecraft Dungeons. 2.5 gigs that are available for download now, so it's not too big of a DLC. Decent size. I don't have a huge expectation for it. I'm looking more just for, you know, a simple distraction. Nothing big in the gaming world has come out. So I mean, Animal Crossing is just dominated everything. So I'm a little little burned out on it, but that's okay. We did talk about our buddies over at Serenity Forge with Neversong, with their release last week, and everyone is loving that game. Their initial reviews from everyone that's finally able to play it have been positive. It's a great little game for Serenity Forge. Another win for them. So hats off to you, Z. Give it a look. Give it a try. Also, new stuff that hit our buddy Joe Vallon over at Unkillable Joe is hard at work. He's launched a YouTube channel, so give that a look. In addition to his comic that he's been working on, he's been diligently working on issue 3, and now he actually has issue 2 available for Fibber. Fibber number 2, it's a 3-issue arc that he's been working on. Issue 2 is now available. Go over to Vallon, V-A-L-L-E-N Comics, and check it out. It's kind of a fun little story. I read the first issue. I'm not going to tell anything about the second issue because he gave me a copy to kind of peruse, and I don't want to spoil it for anyone. But it's an interesting story. Well done, Joe. Keep at it, and let me know what you guys' thoughts are. It's it's unlike anything else out there for comics, because there's not a whole lot yet as the comic industry is getting back on its feet quickly, but it's still taking a little time, a little bit longer than I thought. What else is going on? That kind of is it. Now on to more music. Music here. I really need to find something. I couldn't find anything for this, and I looked. Didn't fit. But my other new segment that I want to do is, I already do Smurf takes on movies, books, things like that. But my new Smurf take is going to be here, highlighted in the podcast, on food. I know. What took me so long to do that? I mean, I already do some work with Tuan for Taste Buds and doing reviews for restaurants and helping them with their product. But We haven't been able to focus on that in restaurants and us going into them to sample their food and highlight them has been a little bit difficult. So with COVID and everything else, I've decided to take a different take at it. So my Smurfs take has been focused primarily with takeout. Now, if you know me and we've had any kind of interactions or conversations, you know my love for wings. It is like the one thing that drives me, and I've always been on a quest to find the best wing possible as far as who has it, who do I avoid, decent meat on the bone. Flavor, of course, is always a must. How they're cooked, I really hate when they get, you know, leathery or there's no meat and it's just all charred skin. Of course, just for the simple ease, flavor, and just because I love the joint, Old Chicago's on Colorado Boulevard, I oftenly frequented just for the wings. Of course, I know the staff and have been going there for years. Regrettably, the Old Chicago's on Colorado Boulevard will not be reopening once everything clears because of the financial crisis now that is afflicting a lot of restaurants and landlords not able to be able to be flexible and negotiate. The Old Chicago's on Colorado Boulevard will no longer be open, which is heartbreaking. I cried. A lot of my friends that work there, I have reached out, you know, trying to encourage, telling them good luck, let me know where you land so, you know, I can come by and say hi when everything gets back to normal and just get caught up and make sure everyone is okay. But that's a huge blow for me. You have no idea. So the quest for the best hot wing actually started years ago, but with everything going on, there's two things that I've been looking for as far as the best, and my take on them is going to go bouncing back and forth. So this week we're going to focus on chicken wings. Next week we're going to do drunken noodles because I love drunken noodles, and there are specific criteria that I look for in drunken noodles, which we will talk about next week. Next week will be my take on drunken noodles and which restaurant did the best. But this week, with wings, I do have to say that the restaurant that now actually superseded and took over Old C's place, thankfully I have a replacement now for it, is Bon Chon. It is just a stellar restaurant. Me and a lot of friends have gone there multiple times. Even before the shutdown, we were going there a lot. It is located in 8302 East Northfield Boulevard, right over there basically off of 76 and Quebec. It's in the Northfield Shopping Center. It's right next to Bar Louis, I think is right there. I think it's Bar Louis. It's right there on the corner. So we would go there almost once a week for a while, it seemed, because once I discovered it, I'm late to the party on this. We discovered Bon Chon in Jersey. So it's a franchise that has moved across multiple places. I know there's a Bon Chon in Vegas, Jersey, of course, and they're popping up all over. This one in Northfield is a father-son ran establishment, and their love for people is as strong as their love for the food that they serve to you. This restaurant has blown me away with their customer service, with the food that they prepare, the flavors that they're using, and just how cool the whole experience has been. What I usually order, of course, is the wings. They are a Korean restaurant, basically a Korean fried chicken, and it is unlike anything in town. I'll just put it that way. There are other wings that they don't even come close, because how Bon Chon does their fried chicken is amazing. Their sauce that they're using is spectacular, and the flavors is unmatched. And you get, it's not like burning hot, it's flavor hot. You're getting these herbs, these spices that mix so well together. The batter that they're using to fry the chicken in is crispy, and it's not like too oily or too greasy, because I know that's usually like the turn off with a lot of fried chicken, especially when you're dealing with like the chain restaurants over at Popeyes or KFC. The oil is perfectly balanced. The batter is brilliant, and everything about Banchan is great. But they do more than just fried chicken. The japchae noodles are delicious. Every time we go in there, it's a must almost. I mean, we gorge ourselves every time we go. I mean, we've been in there a couple times. Brett Leader One and his wife have been there with us. We've taken other people and have exposed them to Banchan. Now, I know they're supposed to be opening up another one here in Colorado. I don't know where it is, but I don't care, because I'm going to keep going to this one. the sauce was created back in Korea back in 2002, so they brought the recipe over here to build this, and it is great. And I was so happy that they were able to stay open and do delivery. Their restaurant was already kind of small, but it was always packed, which is always a good sign. But when we'd show up, you know, small, little wait, which is fine. They got a nice, cute little bar. Sit there, have some wine, get a cocktail, hang out. Then, of course, COVID hit. They are still functioning. They're still open. They're still taking orders. They do delivery, I think, within a certain radius, though. And they do pick up. So the phone number, 303-248-3220. So call in, make your order. You can go by, pick it up. It's easy enough. The street runs right in front of their restaurant right there in Northfield. Get out, go in, grab your dinner, your lunch. You won't be sorry. I wasn't. And like I said, we were still ordering religiously. We've already been there a couple times this month. Just, of course, to, you know, do your part. Help restaurants keep open. I know that the restrictions have lifted a little bit. Restaurants are open now to the public. There is outdoor eating available for Banchan. But I don't know. Like I said, the place is kind of tight. But, you know, I don't think you're going to miss anything by taking it home with you. There are other items on the menu that I don't think you're going to want to miss. But definitely the japchae for sure. Give that a try. And, of course, the wings, so good. Actually, I'm just hungry thinking about it. In fact, maybe that's what I'll do. Go get me some lunch. Ooh. For sure. Yeah, so that is my take on Banchan. Next week, I will give you my take on a new restaurant that was exposed to me that the drunken noodles were, well, find out next week. Tune in. So, that covers this week's Weekend Geek Update. If you've got any questions, if you've got any comments, if there's anything that we didn't cover that you want to know more about, by all means, please hit us up, send us a message. Like I said, we are platform friendly. iHeartRadio has added us, and everybody is feeling the geek fever, because we're more than just a podcast, we're a way of life. So in the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.